Welcome. One match day left in the Bundesliga, and there is still a lot left to be decided. Matt Ford was in Frankfurt to take in Hamburg's devastating loss. Is that all she wrote for the Bundesliga Dinos? Dortmund, Hoffenheim, and Leverkusen all lost over the weekend. Are they just procrastinating on their Champions League qualification? And Bayern Munich are out of the Champions League, but they still know how to keep the drama alive. This is Tribuna Weekly. So Matt Ford was in the away end at Commerzbank Arena this weekend and got to experience firsthand the devastation of Hamburg fans after their 3-0 loss to Frankfurt. Here's what he came back with.
Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to this latest edition of the Tribune podcast. We've got another section with us out and about here in German football. It's match day 33 in the Bundesliga. That makes it the penultimate match day in the 2017-2018 season. And today we're in sunny Frankfurt for the latest final in Hamburg's quest to somehow extrapolate relegation battle. They've saved themselves in dramatic fashion a few times in recent years. Surely it would be their most miraculous escape yet. A game against Freiburg and Wolfsburg. Two results which have left them the relegation playoff spot. That's the 16th place in the Bundesliga. That spot currently occupied by Wolfsburg. Wolfsburg are away at Red Bull Leipzig today, and because it's the 33rd match day, all the Bundesliga games will be taking place simultaneously, as is the case on the days to prevent collusion or match fixing, so that everybody's playing at the same time and no one knows necessarily how relegation rivals have performed the day before or earlier in the day, just to level the playing field a bit. So a lot of eyes today will be on events in Leipzig. Hamburg fans here today know that were Wolfsburg to pull off what I think would be a quite unlikely victory against Red Bull, then they would have to win here today. Otherwise, it's over. Wolfsburg, of course, did actually win in Leipzig last season. So they will think that not all is lost. But it's certainly Hamburg that are coming into this game in better form, I think. But survival is still out of their hands ahead of going into today's game. The Frankfurt fans have arrived, calmly led away and escorted to the away end. But there are lots of other Hamburg fans here as well. So we're going to see if we can have a chat with some of them on this on yet another rollercoaster season.
Match days?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. After the win against Cologne, I think you were top.
Yes.
It was too early. Yeah, it was a bit just a deceit. It didn't really tell the truth, did it? It didn't really give a true indication of where Hamburg were. What are your thoughts on the current team and the game today? Do you think Christian Titz has got the team in a good state of mind?
Yeah, I'm very optimistic.
To survive?
I'm very optimistic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you
see the last three or four games, they're playing football again.
People always talk about Hamburg being like the Bundesliga dinosaur, the only founding member of the Bundesliga who've never been relegated. Is that a really important part of Hamburg or Hasenfels identity? Would it be really damaging or depressing if that was to end?
It's like the only thing that you can go for as a Hamburg fan to say, yeah, okay, we are the dinosaur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll see how it goes today. Were you in Wolfsburg last week?
No, it's my first away game.
Yeah. And so, what are you expecting from your first away game in terms of the atmosphere and the
victory? Victory, 70 victory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hamburg fans are confident, aren't they, today?
Yeah, yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
A team that was so close, is still right on the edge of the abyss. I think it's incredible how confident and how upbeat you all are. So, lads, thank you for your time and enjoy the game.
Thank you.
It's half time here in Frankfurt. Eintracht Frankfurt 1, Hamburg 0. And well, it must be difficult to understand the emotions that the Hamburg fans here in the away end are going through. We have a group of lads next to us here who could barely even bear to watch their players warm up. Some of them looking almost on the verge of tears even before the game kicked off, and yeah, seemingly having to clap each other on the back and give each other a few hugs to reassure them that it would be okay in the end. And it seemed that actually would be the case after 25 minutes when Tatsuya Ito had the ball in the net. Cute scenes of relief and jubilation in the away end, which was cruelly cut short a moment later when the referee noticed that his assistant had raised his flag for offside. And of course, as it is in football, just 5 minutes later, Marius Wolf gives Eintracht Frankfurt the lead. There's been little to see of the creativity that has characterised Hamburg's play in recent weeks. They've really not been at their best today. 1-0 at half time. We'll see how it goes in the second half. It's full time here. It's finished. Eintracht Frankfurt 3, Hamburg 0. The Hamburg end has emptied slightly, however, the hardcore is still there. And as you can hear, they're still cheering their players who are coming over to the away end now. And Sakai and Holtby are now urging the rest of their teammates to climb over the fence and clap the hands of the ultras who are on the fence at the front. Some Hamburg fans here who appear to have given up hope. Quite a few faces with tears. We were talking to one lad who came over to us towards the end of the second half, Torsten. 34 years, home and away with Hamburg. And with tears in his eyes, brought me an extra beer, which he didn't have to do, but maybe appreciate the support. Hamburg will have to win at home against Borussia Mönchengladbach and hope that Cologne beats Wolfsburg. I'm here with outside the away end now, about half an hour after full time, with Marcel. Marcel, Hamburg fan. There's a lot of Hamburg fans sitting around here now waiting for the train. Can you explain how you're feeling, or do you still have hope?
No, we don't have any hope left. It's to be honest, 5, 6, 7 weeks ago we already thought we were going down. Then we changed our coach for another time, and since four weeks we have our new coach, and we won three matches and lost another one, and then we had this feeling, let's call it hope, and after today we have no chance.
At the end of the game there, we saw the Eintracht Frankfurt fans, they held up a new banner with a new clock.
Which is obviously the new one for second league.
A bit of a joke at the expense of Hamburg fans, because you have this.
But really, it really hurts. We've been really, we had very good years in Hamburg from 2005 to 2011, I would say. We had very good years. We were always playing Europa League once or twice, Champions League.
You were in the UEFA Cup semi-final.
Yeah, semi-final. We have been there two times against Fulham and Werder Bremen. And yeah, they were the good years. And we thought, okay, we will never go down. And then the past 5 years, they've been so bad.
Why does it keep happening?
I don't know. From the structure, there have been so many mistakes. Every year we have this Mr. Kühne from company Kühne & Nagel, and he was investing so much money. I think now,
to point out that Klaus-Michel Kühne is the principal investor in Hamburg.
Yes, he owns, I think, it's allowed to say 25% of HSV, and I think he's holding 50 now, and spent with some transfers, he spent some 100 million already. But not everything cheers.
But the club is so reliant on his money that he has a lot of influence.
Unfortunately, yes. it seems that we get the license for the second league without his help, but yeah. It will be very difficult.
Why are Hamburg so reliant on the money of one man? Hamburger Sportverein are a huge football club,
yep.
Former European champions in Germany's second biggest city,
yep.
A fantastic city.
Yep.
Why is the football club so reliant on one man and in such a state of chaos?
Yeah, they made the mistake a few years ago and began to sell the shares. And everyone was thinking, okay, we will go for Europe again. And with the new money, we will make it. But in the end, it was just he spent the money and nothing changed. We had a very bad management for 2, 3, or maybe even 4 times. We had a very bad management, and it's been we bought some very bad players, and we're not able to sell the expensive one at good money. So basically, that's the reason. I would say we have a lot of debt and we have no chance to get out of that situation without him.
If Hamburg go down, obviously it will be the first time the club's been relegated in Bundesliga history. It's something that there's a song that Hamburg fans sing, isn't there? That you sing about
Hamburg meine Perle.
We're German champions, cup winners, and always first division. Immer erste Liga.
Yeah.
Is that an important part of?
Yeah, it is. It is because of the very bad years. The past 5 years have been very hurtful, and so the only thing we had was that we've been the only club which was forever in League One. That was the only thing that was left. So
did that hurt you when the Frankfurt fans were showing up when you
did.
Plot?
It did.
Okay,
man. It did.
Because sorry about that.
No problem. But that's really it. We have nothing. We are playing bad football.
You say you have nothing. Hamburg's a huge club from a great city, like I said.
It is. But we are really not.
There's so much potential.
In terms of success, because we are really not successful. The past 5 years was always relegation and stuff like that. And so the only thing is, which we are singing a lot about, is that we've never been to League Two. And it is, for us it was very important. It was very important because our most competitor, Werder Bremen, I think they've been only for 1 year in League Two. And so if we go down there for 1 year, then we are at even. The only good thing to say. So we have we've done all stadiums in League One. So we're going for away games regularly. So we have another seven or eight new grounds to go. That's the only positive.
What, places like Magdeburg?
Magdeburg is new. It will be new. Aue will be new. Sandhausen will be new. What else?
Heidenheim.
There you go. So as we can hear, there are obviously some positives. Some positives to getting relegated as well.
That's the only thing, to collect some crowds.
Oh, there you go. I think that's quite a nice way to wrap it up. The atmosphere here is, the sun's still shining. However, the mood among the Hamburg fans has been dampened slightly, but as we said, the fans here are still looking forward to next season, because you'll still be there, won't you?
We will be there. It will be difficult, and especially on the first match day, to play against maybe a very bad club from second league, and we'll be.
We'll see how.
Let's see how the atmosphere will be.
We'll see how it goes, lads. Thank you very much, and good luck.
Thanks. Cheers.
That was Matt Ford in Frankfurt, and now he is in the studio. And Matt, you talked to a lot of the fans, and they were devastated after that 3-0 loss to Frankfurt. Is that it for them, in your opinion?
We'll see next week, won't they? I think it was the hope that kills. I think, as I said, during that sort of live section, before kickoff, there was so much confidence going around. Which obviously came directly out of the two previous games against Freiburg and Wolfsburg, where Hamburg had looked like they'd turned a corner, and they went into the game with confidence, especially because Frankfurt weren't in particularly good form. But as soon as the goal started going in, and perhaps more importantly in terms of morale, the video decision went against them as well for Ito's goal, and obviously Holtby's goal was offside as well, that was clear cut. Nothing seemed to go for them, and I think it was a case of the hope killing them more than anything. And I think a couple of the lads said afterwards that oh, in fact, they believe really they were relegated about 5-6 months ago, right. Perhaps even 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But they just got given that little short burst of hope by Christian Titz. Now, obviously, it's not been completely distinguished yet.
No, that's the thing.
Extinguished yet, sorry.
Yeah, so like I think you mentioned in the piece, I mean, if Wolfsburg lose to Cologne next week and Hamburg beat Gladbach, that would mean...
It's two big ifs, though, isn't it?
That's the thing.
You just mentioned two huge ifs.
Right.
And it's so hard to call. You can look at it in so many different ways. The big one being, let's start with Hamburg. They have to, absolutely 100% have to beat Borussia Mönchengladbach, who are still playing for Europe. They can still qualify for the Europa League. If we're assuming that Bayern would beat Frankfurt in the cup final, then seventh place is well within Gladbach's reach. So they've got something to play for. Talking to a colleague today, he reckons they're taking over 15,000 fans up there to Hamburg, so they're absolutely desperate to do it. Will that, we were just discussing before, weren't we? Will that play into Hamburg's hands, or will that work against Hamburg, the fact that Gladbach have got something to play for? I really don't know. It's a very young team. They've got pace on the break, but under that sort of pressure, if Gladbach are on their game, can Hamburg keep them out? I don't know. And then you can argue that, well, Gladbach don't score many goals anyway. There seem to be so many different perspectives and different permutations of how to look at it in that point of view. I wouldn't be surprised if Hamburg won at home. I don't think you would either. I
mean, right.
The form has not been that bad. It was a bit of a slip
in Frankfurt. But like you said, it's not down to their home form. It's down to how Wolfsburg perform against Cologne.
It's not in their hands. And then, okay, let's take the second game, Wolfsburg versus Cologne. Wolfsburg have been absolutely dreadful.
We looked dreadful over the weekend too. Against Leipzig, they looked absolutely dreadful.
4-1 in the end.
The only savior for them was Daniel Di Davi, and he's been
he's far too good for that team.
Exactly, he was far too good for Stuttgart too when they went down. It's a similar situation, and there is definitely, Cologne have nothing more to play for, but with how terrible Wolfsburg are playing, you would not be surprised if they dropped a home game against Cologne. You just wouldn't.
No, you wouldn't be surprised either. And that's what's so bizarre about it. I mean, obviously, we all know what Cologne's problems are, but they've got nothing. You know, the pressure's been lifted. And I saw during the game on Saturday that Cologne were one up, which was surprising. And then I've only seen the highlights since, and I got the impression that Cologne actually did quite well in the first half. They had quite a few chances against Bayern. So I don't know, perhaps the pressure's been lifted off them. They can just... Yeah, play their football in the knowledge that some key players are staying. They've got nothing else to lose. Wolfsburg are under absolutely huge pressure. And they were so poor against Hamburg last week when we saw them. Poor again in Leipzig. Yeah, like you said, I agree. You wouldn't be surprised. It wouldn't be a massive turn-up, would it, if Cologne went there and won?
That's still a lot to do for Hamburg.
Yeah, a lot to do. But... we'll see. But if anyone can do it, it's them, isn't it?
All right, so let's move to the top of the table, because the Champions League spots are still completely wide open, and that was after losses from Dortmund, Hoffenheim, and Leverkusen. None of them
seemed to want
to wrap this up before the final match day. I mean, maybe they were trying to provide drama for a Bundesliga that has kind of lost its narrative since Bayern Munich won the title, but... It is still, it's incredible how these teams can be so mediocre in the final moments. Let's start with Borussia Dortmund, because it was, Sebastian Rode came out over the weekend and talked to Sky about the situation. He was asked about the situation with Peter Stöger, and he said that the way that, I'm paraphrasing him, of course, the way that Peter Stöger is walking around the dressing room at the moment, it's as if he already knows that he's going to leave. Now, Rode has subsequently been fined by Dortmund, but it was very telling to show the situation right now with the yellow and blacks. So they obviously play against Hoffenheim, who outside of last week in Stuttgart have been playing extremely good football, and especially in Sinsheim. So, Matt, do you think that this is something that could his attitude right now could be something that could get them out of the Champions League?
Potentially, I think we were looking at the permutations before, weren't we? I think quite a few results and specific scores would have to go against Dortmund for them to actually end up in fifth. We'll come on to that later, I think. As for Peter Stöger, I think we said on the podcast a few weeks ago that I personally don't think his attitude has been right as a coach. I think we've discussed as well that there are a lot of issues around Borussia Dortmund at the moment, whether that's been a squad which has been too hastily put together by a sporting director and a scouting department which maybe weren't quite on the same page as Tuchel, and then the completely failed change to Bosch which just didn't last, and then this really drastic switch from the high aggressive pressing football that Bosch had them playing to the completely conservative just firefighting football of Peter Stöger. So there's been so many issues going around. Communication has been a big problem. So in that sense, maybe it's actually not that incredible that Sebastian Roda has let something slip, or that they slipped at home to Mainz 2-1. It's actually, looking at the current form, it's actually quite credible.
Yeah, and it's they had seemed to... there were some results after the Ruhr derby that seemed to suggest that they could even come in second over Schalke. Now, of course, Schalke secured second place last over the weekend, but still, I mean, there were still some signs of life. And yet against Mainz, who were obviously extremely motivated to try to secure their survival and were they're relying on some really good attackers at the moment. Well, really good, I mean, for really good for Mainz. Dortmund couldn't raise their level, and it was a home game. It was a home game that they lost to Mainz. That was incredible to see that they were not able to raise their game when they could have secured their Champions League spot.
I think just one personnel issue, I think we can pick out, which would perhaps explain the issues that they had. It's the lack of a striker. I mean, obviously they were quite fortunate to be able to bring in back Shuai after Aubameyang went, and he definitely contributed enough in terms of goal scoring before he got injured. However, from what I saw of the performance against Mainz, it actually struck me a lot like watching some of Borussia Mönchengladbach's performances this year. In that, yeah, talented, creative players in Sancho, in Götze, etc. Going forward. In Max Philipp as well, but just not. I think missing that final final goal scorer, that player in the final third to really put it away. I thought Sancho was tricky and as well, but again, no one in the middle to convert any of his crosses. At the other end, the young lad at Mainz, Baku, the young lad who's come through, was absolutely clinical again, and that was a complete contrast in the way Mainz just took their chances, clinical finishing, and a thoroughly deserved win in the end. But, yeah, personnel and tactical problems were there again for Dortmund. But are we surprised? I mean, okay, we thought maybe that was a bit of a false dawn.
I was only surprised because it was at home. It was their last game of the season in front of their home fans. It was the last. It was the farewell game for Robin Weidenfeller. Now, Weidenfeller wasn't in the game, which I also thought was, would Roman Weidenfeller really been that big of a difference between him and Berkey?
No, perhaps not. But I really don't think at any point in a competitive season you can start letting sentimental reasons dictate
sure,
the team's
but,
team. So I wouldn't have criticized that at all.
Right, but at least I mean,
I also just don't think the Dortmund have been that good at home anyway. I mean, you say right. It's surprising that they lost at home, but they've had quite a few sort of shock results.
Yeah, but not to the likes of Mainz, though.
Oh, I don't know.
Mainz was. Had relied on Pablo de Blas's penalties.
They were almost beaten by Frankfurt. They were beaten by Bremen, weren't they? Schalke came back from 4-0 down. They were beaten at home by Red Bull. I mean, these have been setbacks.
Frankfurt and Red Bull are good teams.
Salzburg came and got a result.
Yeah, Salzburg made... I mean, we might scoff at Red Bull Salzburg, but they made it to their Europa League semifinals.
I'm not scoffing at them. They played
fantastic football.
Great football. But
this is Mainz still.
This is Borussia Dortmund at home.
Yeah, but it's one thing to lose to Leipzig and Frankfurt at home. It's another thing entirely to lose to Mainz, who have been terrible away from home all season long. And
in that point of view, it was a turn up, but not as great a shock as it would have been perhaps last season. I mean, yes, of course, I accept, yes, of course it's a shock that relegation fighting Mainz went to Dortmund and pulled off a 2-0 win, or 2-1 win, having been 2-0 up. But when you consider Dortmund's form, I think it just lessens how surprising it actually was.
Okay, well,
it was perhaps coming.
It ultimately didn't matter because Hoffenheim could not take advantage. They lost 2-1 to Stuttgart, as I mentioned, and Stuttgart even had Santiago Escacibar sent off in the second half, and they still couldn't capitalize on being even just being a man up. Does that make you doubt a little bit that they can maybe get the result they need against Dortmund?
No, because of what you said before about Hoffenheim's home form, especially since they've been out of the Europa League, and we were talking last week, weren't we, about the positive effect that that has had on Nagelsmann's side and the way they've been able to train properly again. So I would be tempted at this point to write off the defeat against Stuttgart as a little bit of an uncharacteristic slip up. Also, that's not, you know, let's give Stuttgart credit. They've been, I think, unbeatable at home, have they lost one at home under Taifun?
I mean, when Mario Gomez can dribble with the ball at your defense, I think that is a little alarming. But at the same time,
showing some turn of pace and flexibility, wasn't
it? And at the same time, he is trying to make the World Cup squad. So,
yeah, I'd put that down as just a bit of a slip up for Hoffenheim, and their home form has been so impressive. Think back, the standout performance for me was against Leverkusen at home when they absolutely blew them away. I think that was that the game where Serge Gnabry scored from the halfway line, or almost. I think
can't remember.
It's been impressive. They've been impressive performances, and they've been firing in the goals. And I think Dortmund have got a huge, huge task on their hands to get a result there. However, like we said, even if they do lose, what were we saying? They'd have to lose 2-0.
So let's break this down.
You know
the
permutations better than me.
Yeah, because basically if Dortmund lose by, they have to lose by 2 goals. And if they do lose by 2 goals, based on the goal difference, Bayer Leverkusen would have to win by 5 goals. Now, Bayer Leverkusen, next week they play Hanover at home. So it's definitely, with some of the results they've had against Red Bull and against even Borussia Dortmund, that it is possible for them to it wasn't Borussia Dortmund, I'm sorry.
No, but they have scored goals.
Yeah, but they have the ability to score many goals when they need to. So that's definitely possible. But then if Dortmund win, that opens up it a little bit more, because then Leipzig, if they win next weekend, they have a chance. That Leipzig are they're playing Hertha Berlin. That's only up the road for them. If they win, they could get back into the Champions League, which would be miraculous considering their recent form. Then you have to also consider Frankfurt. If Hoffenheim and Leverkusen both lose, Frankfurt could also hypothetically still qualify for the Champions League. They would have to beat Schalke, who don't have anything else to play for, but do have won in Gelsenkirchen, of course, in the German Cup. So that's. But the thing is, I think the biggest outsider that we definitely need to talk about, though, is Leverkusen, because they did have a terrific opportunity to almost take Hoffenheim completely out of the conversation. Not completely, but mostly out of the conversation with a win against Werder Bremen, and they came up short, even though they actually looked rather impressive.
I think there's definitely been a slip in Leverkusen's form in recent weeks, hasn't there? I wonder if the thrashing at home to Bayern in the cup has had a slight effect on them there.
Yeah, I mean, you also consider the fact that Leon Bailey's agent was upset with the fact that he was playing as a left wing back. I believe he was playing a similar situation over the weekend, although I didn't get to watch as much of the game as I had hoped.
In fact, he's
basically their best player. And
in fact, I actually personally thought that more of a wing back role, with him checking back and working up and down that flank a lot more rather than just playing as a forward, I personally thought that was one of the positives to his game this season. The fact that he was checking back and helping out, and I've not seen it as detracting from his offensive abilities as well. However, you are right that apparently his agent has come out and said that he's not particularly happy with him
with him playing that position differently. Yeah,
whether that's the agent saying that or Bailey himself that has a problem with it, I don't know. But I'd be surprised. I thought that's actually been a quality to his game.
I mean, they still are relying on Kai Havertz, who's an 18-year-old, to actually do something in front of goal. But he still has. I mean, he's
over
50
Bundesliga appearances.
Yeah, but he still has looked pretty good. It was just shocking to me that they were not able to get. I mean, it's Werder Bremen is just that bugaboo team for them. I guess it's just they whenever they need a result outside of the German Cup victory earlier this season against Bremen, Bremen have given them a hard time no matter what's going on with Bremen off the field or on the field.
I mean, Leverkusen have made huge progress this year under Herrlich. They really have. They've been a joy to watch at times, but you do wonder sometimes if we're being a little bit too harsh on them when they slip up and have these drops in form. Given that, like we said, it is a very young team, we forget how young the likes of Havertz and Bailey are. Kevin Folland's been back in form this season, but he was also, he also had a bit of a dip the past couple of years. It is a relatively young squad, still a very new manager there as well. So, and then when they come off those difficult weeks where they were beaten heavily by Bayern and then by Dortmund in the space of just a few days, you wonder if that had a bit of a psychological effect on them. And that manifests itself in Bremen at the weekend. However, at home to Hanover at the weekend,
5-0 result is definitely possible.
Again, it's one of them where you wouldn't be surprised. But we don't know what Leverkusen side is going to turn up, do we?
Now, of course, they don't necessarily need that result. Of course, if Hoffenheim lose, then they win, then they're in the Champions League. But
a
draw would suffice if Hoffenheim lose. Before we move on, I want to ask this one last question because it did once again show that there's a lot of teams at the top of the Bundesliga table that are have been mediocre in 2018. Does that make you worry of what they are going to be capable of doing at the beginning of next season with a European schedule also on their plates?
Yeah, massively. And yet, I don't think what we will see, unless anything drastic changes over the summer, I don't think. Yes, I am worried and concerned about it, but I don't think it'll be anything different to what we've seen this season. I think they're likely to underperform again. There's a few unknowns in that we don't know how Domenico Tedesco and his Schalke side are going to react to being back in Europe for the first time under a new coach. The same would be true of Herrlich and Leverkusen if they were to make it. Borussia Dortmund, you have to expect more from them. I expect a bit of a shake-up in the whole club over the summer. People looking at Lucien Favre coming in, he seems to be the favourite among, if you listen to some of the reports in Germany. In terms of their European performances, I think that would be all right. Obviously Favre took Gladbach into the Champions League, didn't he? And he has experience there, and he's a very experienced coach. Were they to go in there under Stöger, obviously it won't happen. I would be concerned for them. But yeah, to answer the question, yeah, I would be concerned that we're not going to see much of a change, that the German teams, Bayern aside, but actually we'll come to this later, perhaps even Bayern would struggle as well.
Yeah.
Unless there's changes, unless they mature a bit, unless they learn how to use the ball better rather than just relying on this attack football, and actually learn to have possession at times. I think they could struggle again.
All right, so now we're entering our Shop from Rosette section. Thank you all for voting in the poll this week. There was a last minute winner. And what we're going to be talking about this week is Bayern Munich after their Champions League exit. Now, I've been somewhat surprised with how much there is actually to talk about Bayern Munich, considering they had won the title many weeks ago, and the fact that their campaign in the Champions League has been interesting to watch also from the Bundesliga level, considering that they still have not lost since winning the title back in April. But let's start with what happened over the weekend, because I think that's a great place to start, because you have Robert Lewandowski, who started this game after playing in Madrid. Now, he didn't score in either one of the legs against Real Madrid, but did pick up another goal against Cologne. Now, when he came off, I don't know if you haven't if you've missed this, I will explain it now. When he came off, he refused to shake the hand of Jopainkas or give Jopainkas a high five. I think that's what it was. I couldn't really see the hand positions that quickly. And before going to the bench, and then Jopainkas put it on himself to go over and explain to Robert Lewandowski that that is not okay. And afterwards, he made it clear, paraphrasing somewhat, but also quoting him directly, saying, "I'm the coach, no one else. I make the substitutions at Bayern Munich. The Bayern Munich coach makes the substitutions at Bayern Munich. And you can't act that way." And it's this whole narrative with Robert Lewandowski is really important because of course, Niko Kovac is taking over next season. And who knows if Niko Kovac is going to work with Robert Lewandowski. What do you think of Robert Lewandowski's week not scoring in the Champions League and then pouting basically after being substituted off against Cologne?
Yeah, it was almost the whole week was, I think, a bit of a cherry on the top of the whole Lewandowski cake that's been building and been building all season, really. We've known for a while that he's not entirely satisfied, that he's always dreamed of going to Real Madrid. He's made no secret of that. His performance against Bayern Munich, I thought he was quiet in both legs. And it's precisely those games where your star striker, who considers himself to be a potentially future Real Madrid striker, to be stepping up and making a difference. If I remember correctly, did Bayern have, was it 21 shots on goal over the two legs? And it wasn't enough. Whereas I thought, although they managed to keep the likes of Ronaldo,
I think they had 21 shots in the second leg alone. I think
I'll have to double check that.
Yeah,
but and then going to this weekend, I thought Jupp Heynckes' response to his behaviour there in Cologne on Saturday was absolutely right. But is it surprising? No, not particularly, given that we know that he's probably on the way out. I don't expect to see him there next season personally. I don't think he would. I think it would be difficult for Niko Kovac to have such a personality, such an important figure, almost on strike. I think it's disappointing because you expect more from a player like that. But by all accounts, he's not. I wouldn't say disliked in the dressing room. I don't think anyone here that bad. But you do hear reports that he doesn't spend particularly much time with his teammates or with his colleagues outside of his job, outside of football. He tends to do his own thing, so he's not particularly close to any of them. He's never really bought into Munich or the club Bayern.
Or even, the Mia San Mia.
He's never bought into that the way that, for example, foreigners like Frank Ribery or Arjen Robben have.
Or Arturo Vidal, even.
Or Vidal as well. I mean, Ribery is a good example. Just today, he signed a new contract, or he's accepted a new one-year contract at Bayern, saying that his family, even though his German is still, after 11 years, heavily French. He still considers himself at home in Munich, where his family is. But Lewandowski's not like that. He's always, I think, seen Bayern as a stepping stone on the way to Real Madrid or Barcelona or somewhere like that.
Now, let me ask this because I've had this discussion with some people and it does sound somewhat ridiculous, but I still believe it to be true. I think that Sandra Wagner could be their starting center forward next season. And as if they use that, the money that they would have spent on, basically if Robert Lewandowski leaves and they decide to spend the money they make from a Robert Lewandowski transfer on a superstar that is not a center forward, I think that they could play a season, maybe not multiple seasons, but a season with Sandra Wagner as their centre forward. What do you think?
I think that would be a last resort, although I think it would probably be enough in the Bundesliga if it remains as mediocre in terms of quality as it has been this season. However, if they really want to push on in the Champions League, for me that can't be an option. Having said that, we all know how hard it is to come across out and out strikers, out and out number nines in the current market. Was it Borussia Dortmund, I think, who were barking a little bit at the €63 million or whatever Chelsea said they would offer for a permanent deal for Batshuayi. But that's the rate they're going at. Whether Bayern would whether a strike would actually be available, I don't know. I can't think off the top of my head. whether they'd be prepared to spend that money. In my opinion, they probably should. They probably should break the bank to get a decent replacement. Because to me, Sandro Wagner, for all his qualities,
well, that's the thing. Like,
you can't be leading the life by Bayern Munich.
But you've kind of made my point in a way. In that, who right now is out there that Bayern Munich would be able to buy in? Basically, I'm not saying. I mean, they might be able to buy some teenager or some 21-year-old that could come in and have lead the line next season. But if you're losing a superstar in Robert Lewandowski, they're gonna want to find a superstar to replace him.
Yeah,
so
that's what they'll be after.
What superstar striker would be out there and available? I couldn't think of any. Now maybe there's of course I'm just completely speculating, and there's other people that have their finger on the pulse much firmer than I do, but it's just really difficult for me to come up with names of strikers that would be able at Robert Lewandowski's level and be willing to go to Bayern Munich. And that's why I think until that striker either presents itself or basically Bayern Munich finds someone at the right value to replace the skill set of Robert Lewandowski, I think that they could play with Sandro Wagner at the top of their formation and be successful for a season.
I think in the Bundesliga, but I really don't think that'll be a solution in Europe. Then again, that brings you on to the discussion of to what extent Bayern will compete in Europe under Kovac, to what extent he
perfect,
will adapt to that.
Perfect segue, because that's the next thing I wanted to ask,
totally unrehearsed.
Yeah, totally unrehearsed. So Niko Kovac is obviously going to take over, and now Bayern Munich have qualified for the semifinals of the Champions League four of the last five seasons, actually longer than that. Four of the last five seasons since they won the treble season, I should say. I really don't want to go farther back than that. But basically, Niko Kovac has no experience in Europe. Now, the last coach to take over for Rio Pinkas was Pep Guardiola, who became the highest paid manager in Europe and had won a treble before with Barcelona. Now, Niko Kovac has done neither of those things, and is likely, if I were to speculate, I would make an educated guess that he's not going to be the highest paid coach in Europe taking over Bayern Munich. So what do we expect from Niko Kovac in the Champions League next season? Because I think, like you said, their mediocrity just might put in the Bundesliga right now, just might put Bayern Munich at the top of the table no matter what happens. But the Champions League is where Bayern Munich evaluate. We have to evaluate Bayern Munich, and that's just the way it is. So what do you think that Niko Kovac can do in the Champions League next season?
Such a hard one to predict. I think one of the quotes that stuck in my head was something one of the Eintracht Frankfurt fans said to me over the weekend. When I said, how do you think Kovac will do at Bayern Munich? And he said, even though he's unproven, it's like you being given the keys to a Ferrari. You can't really go wrong, can you? And I thought, okay, interesting point. Yeah, perhaps you can crash it. That's something that could go wrong. But he's taking over, even without Robert Lewandowski, if he does go. He's still taking out a hugely talented squad full of genuine world-class quality and good young players coming through. I'd be very excited to see him integrate properly the likes of Kingsley Coman and Serge Gnabry when they're in. Obviously, Joshua Kimmich has already nailed himself down there. So there's certainly stuff to build on. I think Niklas Süle has been a particular standout at the back when he's had to come in. So yeah, definitely no lack of quality there.
Niklas Süle had a terrific second leg in against Real Madrid.
I thought he was good in the first leg when he came on, actually, as well.
Yeah, I think those two legs. I mean, obviously we're not going to go too deeply into the German national team. Those two legs secured his World Cup spot, though.
Yeah, part of that, well, that and Jerome Boateng.
Right.
Like,
well, yeah,
scout. But I thought it was unfortunate that there was a huge chance in the Bernabeu, actually, in the second leg. I think the ball fell, first of all, to Süle in the edge of the box, and he was already up for a corner. Mm-hmm. The ball then fell to him, and you thought, oh, if that had just fallen to a Thomas Müller there or Lewandowski, that would have been back of the net. Mm-hmm. But it fell to Süle. I think he smashed it wide somewhere. But there you go. He's got great pace and great positioning and great heading ability at the back. Although I did see that he's now level. I think only Franz Beckenbauer has scored more own goals in the history of Bayern Munich. He's now on three.
Yeah, he's on three. Yeah,
putting it into the top corner against Cologne. Good finish. So he has been good. But going back to Kovac, he's taking over a world class squad. The striker issue aside, we don't know. I still wouldn't call Sandro Wagner world class.
I would not call him world class either. Okay. But I also would want to point out, just to go back to that really quickly, that they won the treble with Mario Mandzukic.
Yeah, true. Again, a different type of striker and a better striker than Sandro Wagner. Sandro Wagner. He's got a lot of qualities. European Cup winning quality he does not have, I would say. Sorry, Sandro. Balanced against that, there was the fact, like I said, Kovac has got absolutely no experience. And there, I think the instant comparison that comes to mind is David Moyes taking over at Manchester United a few years ago. Admittedly, I think this current Bayern Munich squad has got more potential and more genuine quality than the squad left behind to David Moyes then. But in terms of experience, you're looking at a very similar situation. How's he going to deal with that on the absolutely biggest stage?
I will say the biggest difference there, though, is that Niko Kovac has managed a team internationally. Now, that is a very wide-open net that I just cast, but I do think that his experience he has experience coaching a team in a different country. I think that matters.
Personally, I don't think it does. I think the two are chalk and cheese: international management and club management, especially club management in a club like Bayern Munich.
Right, but
personally, I wouldn't draw that comparison at all.
Right, but what I think is important though is that when you're playing in a different country, I think that experience matters. Ralf Hasenhüttl had never played in a different country before. Peter Sturge has never coached in a different country, like going from traveling between countries before. And yet Niko Kovac knows basically the routines that need to be in place.
Okay, yeah, I can accept that. I know what you're getting at. Personally, yeah.
I think that part of it matters. I don't think his entire Croatian resume matters.
I wouldn't overstate that. Yeah, that's true. Then again, I don't think that'll be an issue anyway, because the Bayern squad, as young as some of them are, still have a wealth of experience. The issue will be, yeah, the extent to which Kovac can exert his authority on the squad, the extent to which he can convince a group of world-class players at a world-class club who have benefited from world-class coaching, the extent to which he can convince them of his own credentials and his own ability, his own tactical ideas. I don't doubt his personal qualities. I think we've discussed that quite a few times in regards to the way he's been able to bond a squad of 18, I think, nationalities at Eintracht Frankfurt. Hugely impressive. It's going to be an interesting one. I hope I'm proved wrong, because I like Niko Kovac. He's an outstanding job at Frankfurt, and he comes across as a very likeable person. I hope I'm proved wrong, but I suspect that he could struggle in Europe with Bayern, despite the world class quality that he has at his disposal.
How many trophies does he win next season?
Tough one to call. I mean, obviously, it'd be very easy to sit here and say one, the Bundesliga. But there have been, if we go back to before Bayern Munich's current streak, Bayern have had off years, and sometimes it's been quite a surprise candidate which has popped up just to supplant them, if only temporarily. Werder Bremen did it, Stuttgart did it, Dortmund under Klopp did it. If they are to slip up, then we have to see an improvement from Schalke. I say improvement, there's been a huge improvement this season, but we have to see Schalke step up. If we have a situation where Kovac struggles to get off the ground with Bayern and they do drop slightly, then we're reliant on Schalke showing genuine improvement, in which case they've got a chance. If that doesn't happen, yeah, they'll still win the Bundesliga, but they won't get anywhere in Europe.
All right, that'll do it for this week's Tribune Weekly. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, and if you do, please leave us a friendly review. You can also like our Tribune Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribune Podcast. You can find Matt Ford on Twitter at Matt_4D, and I'm at Davis_VanOptor. Before we go, here is our stat of the week. Tilo Kehrer scored both goals in Schalke's 2-1 win over Augsburg. He is the first Schalke defender to score a brace since Joel Matip in 2013. Thanks for listening, and we hope to hear from you next week.